What's up, what's up? You are now listening to FY Fly the Podcast, and I'm your host, Hassan Thomas, along with Remy, and we are here to share tools on how millennials can budget, save, invest, and understand student debt and credit to achieve financial freedom. If you're a high school student, college student, or someone who's interested in gaining more financial insight, this podcast is for you.
I'm trying to give me a bag. 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 I'm trying to give me a bag.
What's up, my fly folks out there? How y'all doing? I hope y'all doing all right. My name is Hassan Thomas, aka CEO Diddy, the perfect mix between global entrepreneur P. Diddy and financial guru Dave Ramsey. And y'all know I'm here with my brother Remy G, aka Mr. Make a Play. What's up, bro? What's new?
Man, what's up? What's up? I'm feeling great, my boy. Got me a little fade today, some crawfish. I'm ready to lock in. Let's get it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got that fresh Remy G fade, man. Well, here at FY Fly, we like to start off our show with a meaningful quote about money. And y'all know this is a show about financial literacy. And financial literacy at its simplest is not only understanding how to budget your money, but being able to save and grow your money effectively and efficiently. So today's quote comes from Robert F. I think REITs are a great way to play the real estate market. REITs have become so popular because they give you a great way to diversify real estate holdings across a much larger spectrum, rather if you individually invested into real estate. And let me tell you, I couldn't agree more with this quote, because today we're going to be chopping it up about the easiest way to become a real estate investor. Yo, this your boy CEO Sonny, aka The Kid That Did. And before we really jump into our show, I just wanted to let y'all know, I've officially dropped my clothing line HRTs. And we're starting off with our four flagship designs. We have CEO, creating everyday opportunities. For my FY Fly ladies out there, we have WWW, Women With Wealth. For my FY Fly fellas, because y'all know we can't leave y'all out, we also have our Invest Men shirts. And last but not least, we have our Run Up A Check shirts. Thank y'all for tapping in with us. The link will be in the show notes. Hope y'all enjoy the show. Let's go. So the easiest way you could become a real estate investor is through REITs. Not REITs, but REITs. And don't worry, our guest had to correct me on it too, because I so thought it was REITs.
Man, I would have said REITs too. I mean, look at it. It's REITs.
I'm knowing, bro. I'm knowing. That's why I said that joint so confidently in our interview. But boy, I was wrong. But anyway, so y'all know I love preaching and teaching about ETFs, which are a group of stocks, as y'all should know. Well, REITs are literally the same concept, but instead of investing into one real estate project, you can invest into multiple and diversify or spread out your investments. So basically, REITs are companies that own income-producing real estate properties such as apartments, warehouses, self-storage facilities, and malls and hotels.
And we believe this form of real estate is the easiest to jump into because you don't have to go out and wholesale, fix and flip, or buy and hold. You can literally download an investing app like Fundrise, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, or Stash and invest into these REITs.
Hold on now. We can't build without no foundation, brother. We ain't even telling what REITs stand for.
You're right, son. We didn't. So REITs stand for Real Estate Investment Trust, and we're going to give you the top four reasons why you should be taking advantage of this major play. Number one, REITs are required to pay out dividends. Number two, instant diversification. Number three, simplicity. And number four, low cost and low fees, baby. So how a REIT works is, it's kind of like a mutual fund in a sense, where they pool you and other investors' money together, and then from there, they go out and invest in the real estate. Sounds like an amazing move for them, right? Well, it sounds a little too amazing. So in order to avoid having to pay taxes, REITs are required to pay out 90% of all income as dividends to us. But hey, CEO, you trying to lace them up on dividends?
Yes, sir. You know I am. So dividends are what a company pays out to you, the investor, just for holding a stock of security. So that's why investing early and often is so important. Some older folks who invested wisely are able to have dividends cover and pay their bills like car notes, utilities, and different things like that.
Man, if they really making plays, they got those dividends paying for mortgages and some more stuff.
No cap. But next we got instant diversification. And this is the exact reason why I love ETFs. So just like with ETFs, with REITs, you're not making a single play or an investment. You are simply investing your money while someone else is doing the manual labor of real estate investing. With this diversification, you are now able to invest into a group of assets instead of an individual one. So now you have options.
Huh? Because you did tell me having an option is literally the best option.
Yes, sir. You know, that's big facts. One of the best pieces of advice my pops told me that I'll never forget. It literally works in every situation.
Nah, for real. Hasn't let me wrong yet. Besides my baby Don, you know, you're the only option I see.
That boy said, you're the only 10 I see. Hey,
chill out, son. So for our third reason we love us some REITs is that they're simple, bro.
And sis, can't forget our FY Fly queens out there. Y'all know we love y'all.
Facts, facts. You know we love our FY Fly ladies out there. But yeah, REITs are so simple because you don't have to start with the second least complicated method of real estate, which is wholesaling. And if you haven't already, tap back in with our episode called Wholesale Tales with our boy O'Neal Parker.
Yes, sir, but let me give him a quick little recap on wholesaling, G. So wholesaling is basically you playing matchmaker. So there are three players in the wholesaling game. You have the motivated seller. This seller is selling their distressed property to the other player in the game, which is the buyer. The buyer is looking to buy the distressed property for the low. And then you have the wholesaler. And then you have the wholesaler. You're in the middle, like I said, playing matchmaker. So your whole goal is to link and match up a motivated seller and a buyer. But with REITs investing, you ain't got to do none of that. Right, G?
Facts. You ain't got to do none of that. You ain't got to find a beat up home and fix it, then go looking for a buyer. And you don't have to buy the full outright property and hold it for many years. Literally, find an investing app. And what you say on the last episode, son? Set up automatic payments and forget about it.
That boy sound like Remy Rockefeller. My man got mob ties in Houston, huh?
Chill out, man. Chill out, man. You know we got to keep that on the low.
For sure, for sure. My fault, my fault. So last reason why REITs are such big plays is the low cost and low fees associated with it. So for the average real estate play, according to Investopedia, it says, depending on your circumstances, you could be paying 3.5 to 20% down on your home. So say you wanted a $100,000 home. On the high end, you would be required to put down $20,000. On the low end, you would be required to put down $3,500.
As y'all can see, real estate is no joke. But that's why it's so important our credit score is right and that we're in that 700 and above club so we can use OPM. And for those of y'all who don't know what OPM is, it's other people's money. And we use this to bring in these type of big investments.
And that's facts, G. I think our FY Fly folks know that credit is the foundation for anything major we want to do in our lives. But yeah, man, I invested $500 into Fundrise last year, and I now have $517 in that account. So I made a 17% return back on my money in just 1 year. Keeping that in mind, the average return on the stock market is between 7 and 10%. So what they say, brother, do the math, huh?
Yes, sir. But did you have anything else you wanted to touch on?
Nah, bro, I think we ready to slide into our insightful interview with Mr. Andre Albritton, a.k.a. the Millennials Next Door.
Hold on, CEO. Let me touch on something real quick. I want to make sure our folks know exactly where they can access REITs so they can tap in.
Nah, you right though, bro, because education without application is worthless.
I knew you was going to say that, bro. So the top five places that you can buy REITs are Fundrise that my brother talked about earlier, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Webull, and Stash. Also, some of the top performing REITs right now are Annaly Capital Management, AGNC Investment Corp, and sheesh, Brandywine Realty has grown 106%.
Now that actually makes sense, bro, because they are a parks, hotel, and resort REIT. Really recovering back strong from last year's quarantine. So they said now we outside with it, huh? But now we'll take a quick break and slide into our insightful interview with REIT King, Andre Albritton, a.k.a. the Millennials Next Door. Let's go. What's up, my fly folks out there? How y'all doing? I hope y'all doing all right. And today we are speaking with the CEO of the Millennial Next Door, Mr. Andre Albritton. How you doing, boss man?
Hey, man, I'm doing well today. No complaints. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta, so it's all good. Yeah, I couldn't complain if I wanted to.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So tell us more about you, man, your background, how you got started with your business.
Yeah, my background, it started really finance as far as when, let's see, I think that was like year 2016. I was still working in insurance, getting bored with insurance. And then my friend, she was studying for a certified financial planner thing. And basically, I had no idea that people would pay other people to tell them what to do with their money. So that was like a whole new world to me at the time. Since then, I've just been diving into it. The Millennials Next Door, that started when I was just writing about a little bit things I've been learning through my financial books, and people really got a good dig into those. So with that, I was like, okay, well, these people are interested in learning about more financial tips. So I just kind of went with it. Next thing I know, the followers kept growing and growing, so I started trying to revamp myself. And now I think I'm at a good spot where I'm able to do a podcast, still help out a few clients here and there, but I mainly focus on doing virtual summits now. You know, just teaching about stocks and investing or real estate or how to make extra money.
Okay, okay. So, man, I'm glad you touched on that real estate because we're going to be tapping in on that pretty heavy, man. My first question for you is, what exactly are REITs and how do they work?
So REITs, they stand for a real estate investment trust. Basically, the easiest way to think about it is, like, let's say you go to Las Vegas on the Strip. You have a few of those big hotels. Now, those hotels aren't privately owned. You know, like one guy, he does not own the whole hotel. That'll be a lot of money, a lot of maintenance to do, so on and so on. So what they do instead is very similar to a regular retail store. They'll rent out the property and they'll pay a leasing amount to the actual owners of the property. So, you know, when you go into the Las Vegas Strip, most of those hotels are owned by a REIT, MGM. That's their ticker symbol. And from there, the main idea for it is it's like a big corporation that owns a lot of real estate. And because they own a lot of real estate, they get a tax break for it, to pretty much to the point, if they pay 90% of their income back into shareholders in the form of dividends, they don't get taxed at all. So that's what's in it for the owners of the hotels. And then on the other side is you have the investors like us. We like it mainly for the high dividends. So, you know, a company like Tesla or Apple, they don't have to pay dividends, but any type of REITs, they have to pay dividends. So that's like one of the main differences between the two.
Okay, okay. So I'm actually investing in some REITs on Fundrise. So are there other options than Fundrise, and what are some of the best options?
Yeah, so there's plenty of options. You know, you can always find other companies just like Fundrise. I know for Fundrise, I think the only disadvantage I usually hear is, you know, your money is tied up there for maybe a few months or a few years, depending on what you sign up for. Now, for me, you can find REITs on the regular stock market as well. And there's like so many different kinds. Like if you've ever been driving on the road, you might see those billboards. A company called Lamar. Have you ever heard of that one?
No, sir. I can't say I have.
Yeah, like they might be popular here down on the southern region, but they own all the billboard lands and they'll REIT as well. So you got things like that. If you've ever been in the post office, those REITs probably own the post office too. Pretty much the government, they don't own the buildings, because you have to think the government isn't really into trying to maintain a building. You know, they just want to use it and pay rent. So, you know, there's a REIT for that as well. That's things called Postal Realty. So that's one I'm invested into. I'm also invested to one for Apple Hospitality. They own a lot of the hotels, the Services Properties Trust. They own a lot of hotels as well. And Welltower, they own a lot of hospitals and nursing homes. So stuff of that nature, like, you'll be amazed at what's really out there, like, before you never even considered any of it.
So can we trade REITs like we can trade, you know, stocks and ETFs?
Yeah, you can. So when REITs, they're really stocks as well, so they trade on the regular market. So if you can buy Apple on whatever platform you're using, you can buy some REIT companies as well. So now you got the public ones that you can buy on the market. You have the private ones. Of course, you have to contact them directly, but that might be like the Fundrise. So Fundrise be considered a private REIT just because they're not trading publicly on the market.
So how has these REITs, how has the REIT market, you know, performed during this COVID crisis that we've been going through?
So COVID, like most other things, it truly brought down the REITs as far as value. Now, for me, I was not happy for COVID, but I definitely took advantage of it, you know, being that the prices were low. And that's what I like about REITs, you know, they're very common sense. So just for example, hotels do well when the market is doing well because people have money to spend. If there's a recession, no one's going on vacation or anything, so the hotels aren't being used. Being that COVID really shut down the whole travel industry, hotel REITs dropped as well. So because of that, I've been buying a lot of hotel REITs because ideally when the economy comes back, the hotel REITs will come back. I'll be able to get on the value and some of the dividends at the same time.
So I say, you know, one of the coolest things for me investing into Fundrise was, you know, investing into it and then forgetting about it. And then, you know, getting a notification saying I received the dividend, that I own a new property, was pretty lit for me, man. So
Yeah, I would imagine.
Most definitely. So can you touch back on those dividends and how important it is, you know, to really seek out dividend yielding assets?
No, I always like to say for Beyonce, you know, she's a millionaire and she only has 24 hours in the day. So she can't do everything. So for anyone who's trying to become wealthy, you're trying to build up your assets, you have to make money while you sleep, no matter what. Because, you know, you only got 24 hours in the day. So, I mean, my personal goal is always to try and create more dividends so that can be a new stream of income. And that can ideally pay for one item. So maybe it can pay for my power bill once a month. And then I keep on growing and growing and kind of take advantage of compound growth. And then maybe those dividends can pay for a vehicle the next time. So that's what it's really about. You know, you want to create money while you're not working for it. And it's just kind of creating all the way in the background. And as you mentioned, when you forget about it, it has more time to build. So you're not touching it as much. Mm-hmm. And that's the true power, you know, when it's just taking advantage of compound growth. Simple as that.
Man, touch on that compound growth for us. We have a lot of young listeners, and that compound growth would really help them. So tell us why that's so important.
Compound growth is basically a snowball. And, you know, this snowball, it can work for you or against you. So I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably have student loans, possibly some credit card debt. That is when compound growth is working against you, right? Because, you know, the debt keeps growing, the interest rates keep growing, and you still have to keep paying it. So you try and make it work for you. Now, some other ways to make compound growth is, you know, you can just invest into your 401k when you get a job, or a Roth IRA, and just have that money just keep on growing over the few next years. And, you know, you'll wake up one day, maybe 10 years down the road, you look in your account, you might have like $70,000. So compound growth, it works well with two things. It works well with consistency. So you have to be consistently putting money into the account, and then it works well with time. So the earlier you start, the better. So with that, if the market goes down, you have time to recover. If the market goes up, that means you're just taking advantage now. So it works best with consistency and time. Those are its two main superpowers.
Okay. So let's touch on some ETFs. Those are really some of my favorite investments. What are your thoughts about ETFs?
I'm a fan of ETFs. So, you know, that's basically just a basket of stocks. And there's like so many ETFs. Like, you got ETFs for games, ETFs for any type of cannabis products, ETFs for anything that they can track. And the best part about it is they have a low fee. I want to say, like, I never seen nothing past maybe 0.75%. And that's really low for what they do. I think it's a good strategy to do when you're not sure of what exactly you want to buy. So, like, maybe you want to do Tesla, maybe you want to do Nikola. You don't know which electrical vehicle one you want to do, so you might as well just do a basket of them all. So that way, as long as the industry goes up, your ETF is going to grow. So that's kind of really setting aside the risk factor of it. So if Tesla goes down, you don't lose all your money. If Tesla, you lose a little bit, but not all of it. So I've always been a fan of ETFs.
And those ETFs stand for Exchange Traded Funds, because I know I didn't say it when I asked you. So something I wanted to make sure that I included in my upcoming financial literacy app was people being knowledgeable about fractional shares. So can you elaborate on what those are?
Fractional shares is rather new. They will become popular in 2020. So the example I can give is, imagine you want to buy a pizza. So you go to pizza shop ABC, right? This pizza shop, for whatever reason, they sell the pizzas in one big pie, and they sell it for $20. So you want a piece of the pizza, but you don't have $20. Let's say you have $10. So the shop, they say, hey, let's start slicing up the pizza. So they slice it into four slices. Now you're able to get half of the pie. So from the consumer standpoint, with that same pizza, you're able to enjoy the pizza because you're hungry and you use what you had, right? On the other side for the shop, they say, okay, well, we got $10 now. Awesome. So everyone's still happy in the situation. And keep in mind, with that pizza, the ingredient doesn't change. You know, it's still the same type of pizza they would have been making. All they did was they started splitting it up. So the same when it comes to companies now. So maybe you don't have the same $400 for Apple. So they say, hey, invest what you can. So if you don't have $200, you can own half of a share, and you're still making money on half of that share. A lot of people, they want to go ahead and buy the full share so they might save, but what you're missing out on is the time in between. So if it takes you a month to save up that amount, you might be missing out on a month of gains you could be getting from the stock. And, you know, it's very simple in the sense, like, some money is better than no money. So if you think the company is good, you only got maybe 25% of a stock, get 25% of the stock. That's perfectly fine. I mean, I don't want anyone to lose out on money just because you want to own one full share when it really doesn't matter, you know?
Definitely. So can you touch on what a stock catalyst is for us?
Yes. So a stock catalyst is basically an event that causes the price of that stock to move. Most of the times it usually means some type of significance. So you might make the stock drop 10% or increase by 10%. To go over some examples, let's say Nikola for the electric vehicles, when their chairman stepped down, I think it dropped like maybe 18% that time. Or that Kodak stock, Kodak increased at one point maybe like a good 100% or 200% in one day. And that's just because Trump said, hey, we're going to use Kodak for some of the COVID-19 resources. So anytime a big event happens, that is usually a stock catalyst.
So it sounds like it's very important, you know, to be up to date on financial news and just being aware.
Yes. So you definitely want to be aware. You can set up alerts. I know Finance Yahoo does that. You can probably do it on Google too, just so you know, so you're not really surprised by anything. So now if you own stocks of ABC, you'll want to know everything that ABC is up to. And if it's anything major, you want to know as soon as possible so you can make some decisions on whether you want to sell the stock for a profit or you want to sell the stock just to recoup any of the damages, or if you just want to keep it right there.
Okay. So man, options, day trading, swing trading, you know, those are all ways you can make active income in the stock market. So what are your thoughts on those three investment options?
Okay. So for those, and you have to remind me of them again, I'm sure. So when it comes to day trading, I think for day trading and, well, no, let's just say day trading. Day trading, that requires a little bit more time on your part because you will have to watch. Usually what they mean by day trading is you are making a short-term trade. So you buy stock ABC, a few hours pass, you sell the stock. So you don't hold on to the stock that much. Now for options trading, I would strongly encourage anyone who's thinking about doing that to take at least one course, pay them out. I would say, I know one guy, I think is Hood Capital. He has a course for like maybe $99 you can take really easy just to learn a little bit more about it. Because the thing about options is just very risky. So during COVID, because all these risky stocks are still in the market, there's a lot of things happening every day. Some people are making some astonishing amounts of money from trading options. But a lot of people are losing a lot of money trading options. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you can put up $1,000 and you can make $5,000 from it, or you can lose the $1,000. So that's why you always want to make sure you understand what you are doing in the process. Because yeah, you can easily lose money. You can easily gain money. You never know. So when it comes to swing trading, I'm a little bit of a fan of it. And I hate to say because I'm more of a buy and hold kind of guy just for that. But you know, swing trading is similar to day trading. I think the main difference is you might hold on to a stock for several days, maybe a few weeks. But otherwise, you're not holding on to it for no more than a month. So you buy stock ABC, you wait till 2 weeks, maybe something major happens that you thought would happen and it happens in your favor. So you go ahead and swing and sell the trade. So it's just like a longer term for day trading.
Okay, pretty simple. So can you give us your top three rules or tips when you think of investing?
Rule number one would be invest in what you can afford to lose. Because at the end of the day, these are stocks, they are still risky no matter what. So you can always lose your money. I mean, if you think you need the money for a house, I would say save that money into a bank account instead of investing it, because you might lose it. Of course, on the other hand, you might gain on some money, but still, it's like if you want to even take that risk. Number two is to do your research. So outside of people like me on Instagram say, oh, hey, I bought this stock, I made this much, or I'm just talking about this stock too. Do your own research, come to your own conclusion, and then make that decision. So, you know, some trades for Warren Buffett when he would start selling his airlines. He sold them, I bought them. Two whole different situations, okay? And then last but not least, I'll say use common sense. So common sense would tell me right now that some of these stocks aren't gonna make it past COVID. And common sense would tell me some stocks are doing well because of COVID. So just as an example, Wayfair, Overstock, they are doing extremely well because of COVID, since everyone's inside their house to try and get furniture. So I say to myself, hey, what's going to happen when COVID is done? If it is ever done, most likely this stock is going to go back to where it was before. So if I invest now and the vaccine comes out tomorrow, I'm going to be out of my money. So to me, that might be a stock that's too late for me to get in on. But now I can start to think ahead of time and say, okay, common sense would tell me what will people do once a vaccine is found? They'll probably stop flying everywhere, traveling to hotels. So my common sense is to say, hey, let me find the companies that are going to benefit from this in the next few months and try and think ahead of the curve. So, you know, when you get into the whole trading mindset, you want to be proactive compared to reactive, because you're going to lose money if you're just reactive to the news. So you have to try and be ahead of the curve.
Be proactive, not reactive. Okay.
So, man, how important do you think it is to have a strong mindset when you're trying to become an entrepreneur?
On a scale of 1 through 10, I say it's probably a good 15. Yeah, like, there's a lot of things I was going to tell you, hey, don't do this. I mean, it's difficult. Let me rephrase. I would consider myself lucky in a sense, just because I saw some instant reaction and instant feedback. But if I was talking to myself, like through my Instagram account, if I just kept talking to myself, I don't have 200 followers after a year or two, I would easily quit. Easily. Because I'd say, hey, there's nothing there for me. But there's still a market out there, even though at the time I would say, nothing for me, let me get out of there. So that's why the mindset is strong, and that's why it's so much needed. Because common sense is going to tell you, your regular job pays way more than this. So you have to have the vision for it. You have to say, this can really replace my income, or at least be a nice complement to my income. So no, you can do the 9-to-5 and be an entrepreneur at the same time. You don't have to pick or choose one, because I'm still doing both items. And probably at least for the next 5 years, I'll probably keep doing that and just making both items work, because I just want extra money.
Facts. Man, so how can we find that balance? Because I heard you say, you know, if you would have kept going after a year and you still only had 200 followers, you probably would have quit. So how do we find that balance of, you know, keep going, keep progressing, and okay, this is not for me?
Everyone's going to find their own balance. For me, this is my fourth business. Yeah, it probably is. So my balance usually is, if it's not making money, then becomes an expensive side hustle. And I have to say to myself at that point, hey, am I okay with this? Like, if I'm just really enjoying it, I don't mind funding it, yeah, I'll probably just keep on doing it. But, you know, that's my personal balance. And for myself as well, I like to work a lot. So I've been able to find a balance between my regular 9-to-5 and being that I work from home now, which is amazing so far. Right after work, I just pick up my laptop and I get back to work on the other job. So that's been my balance. Everyone's going to find their own. You have to keep in mind what you want for yourself and how bad do you want it. And for those who are thinking about quitting, I'll say this much. I know it's not a popular opinion, and I hope I do not really hurt anybody's feelings right now. But entrepreneurship is not for everybody. It really isn't. So it's okay to do your 9-to-5. Like, you can still be wealthy with a 9-to-5. Plenty of people do it. Plenty of people become wealthy through entrepreneurship. And a few people go broke over entrepreneurship. So you have to find out what you want in your own life.
Like we said a little earlier, man, if you're an employee or whether you're that business owner, you can still reach financial freedom by finding different ways to build generating assets.
Yeah, and there's plenty of ways to do it.
Big facts. So can you touch on self-doubt for us? Because I'm sure, you know, even the most confident person even has doubted themselves sometimes. So, you know, touch on that for us.
Self-doubt, that's just part of the process, man. Like, I pretty much put that with failure. If you're an entrepreneur and you haven't failed yet, you're probably not doing it right. So throughout the past 2 years of when I took this business, and I mean, I took it very seriously in the sense, like, I'm actually going to do this now. I'm sure I failed on a few things, because I used to do financial coaching. That definitely failed. And it was like a simple reason why I failed. You know, people who need help with money, they don't have all the money in the world to pay me to help them. So it's, oh, well, that makes sense now. So, you know, I can say I failed on that side. But my failures really lead up to my accomplishments, just because I was able to start doing summits. So I started doing them last year, and I only did one last year. Now I'm doing 3 this year, just because the one last year worked so well. So, okay, hey, I'm good at this one. But I would have never known, because if I hadn't failed, I would still been on the past, not moving to the future on something that might really work out for me.
So basically, find your way, find your own lane, and stay in it, and just keep on trucking. That's basically what I got.
Yeah, man, that's it. And so for the entrepreneurs, like, who think about, like, what type of social media to do, This is how you can do this, and this is how you can kind of relate it to your business. But do all the social media accounts and see which social media account picks you. So, you know, I didn't like Instagram, but Instagram was my biggest one, so I started following that now. So you can do the same inside your business. If you have multiple different streams of income, do all the streams of income. Because, you know, I did the financial coaching, I did in-person events, I did financial summits, I did selling courses online. And I said, which of my streams of income is going to pick me? Which one's going to be working for me right now? And, you know, you just ride the wave.
Facts. Ride that wave. Man, one wealth building tip that I seen you like to reference is, you know, living below your means. So me personally, I'm the type to have my cake and eat it too. Because why would I have some cake and not eat it? So I really never agree with that quote. But how can we live below our means and still enjoy our life?
You can do that really well. You know, it comes down to delayed gratification. So the first thing you have to ask yourself is, how bad do you want something and when do you want it? That's going to decide how much you can enjoy right now and how much you can enjoy later. Mm-hmm. Now, a few ways is to hit at the big ones. So don't focus on the pennies. So the pennies might be like, well, if I turn off my power on Mondays and Tuesdays, I'll save $5 this month. Don't focus on pennies. Focus on the dollars. So like, what type of car are you driving? Who are you living with? If you're not living with anyone, consider a roommate. Or how many vacations are going on per year? So those are usually the main reasons why people live above their means. And the way to live below your means is just do a percentage. So if you want to have fun with maybe 15 to 20% of your money, just do that. So every time you get a paycheck, 20% goes into your fun fund and you can do whatever you want with it. Or you can save it up for a big trip. But yeah, as long as you don't go past that 20%, you're still going to be doing well financially. So I think that's what it comes down to. Because, you know, living with no fun is not for everybody. I know it's not for me. I think every time I get a paycheck, I spend at least $200 just on fun items. So then whether I'm getting a speaker or ordering some random stuff from Amazon or going out on the town, I need some fun in between. Otherwise, I won't make it. Now, then I do something dumb and I say, oh, well, let me buy a big vacation because I haven't had fun in the past 2 months.
So in your opinion, why do you think financial literacy is so critical for young people?
I think it's critical for everybody. When it comes to life, you know, it's all about choices, and the amount of money you have is going to dictate your choices. So, you know, if you go into a store, if you don't have 10 bucks, there's only so much you can get. So when you know a little bit more about financial literacy, then you can say, hey, I know to do this, I know to do that. You might come back into the store with $20. So now you have other options, and that's what you want throughout life. Like, you just want more options than just saying, hey, I have to work here, and you might hate working there. So it just helps create options. When you do financial literacy, you're just going to understand your money, you're going to become more financially conscious, and it's going to open up your life so much better in the ways of things that you can't even imagine down the road.
Man, so why is it so important to regularly track and check your finances?
It's important just to make sure you're not messing up. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all swipe the debit card and no one's like a calculator. So who's going to be checking your bank account? If you're not checking it, the bank's really not checking. Like, they'll wait till you overdraft and they'll take your money gladly. They want you to overdraft. Then you have to take the self-responsibility and say, hey, this is my money. I'm the CEO of my own finances and I need to check in on my money. Not every day. I mean, I do every day. That's just because I probably have an issue with that as it is. It's just a habit now. But just checking on it maybe once a week or maybe bi-weekly. So if you start get the urge, I think I spent too much this week. Yeah, you probably did. And you need to check on it so you can just see what it is. Otherwise, you're not going to know. And I promise you, the number's not going to get any better. So it's like just ripping off the Band-Aid.
Man, I think you need to check that joint every day. We wake up and check Twitter, Instagram every day. We need to check what that money looking like.
Hey, you right now.
Yeah, for real. Got to get your dollars up, not your followers up. Okay. So, man, can you give us some tips or rules about budgeting and saving?
The main rules I have for budgeting is to focus on the margin. The margin is basically your expenses minus your income. And then what you do with the margin, that's where your opportunity lies. So let's say you have $500 after expenses and of income and expenses. So you can use that $500 to invest in the market. You can use it to buy a purse. You can use that $500 to save. You can use that $500 to go to the club. So that's where your opportunity really lies. So I always used to make sure my clients were focusing in on the monthly margin, just to say, hey, this is how much money you have. This is what we can do with it. Let's decide what to do with it now. So that way, when the money comes in, we don't just start spending it willy-nilly. And then for the margin, there's mainly two ways to increase your margin, which is what you should be trying to do every single month. And that is one, decrease expenses, two, increase your income. And the bonus answer is to do both.
Okay. I'm definitely going to be writing them down.
Yeah, like it's very simple, but that's all it takes. Like just focusing on a monthly margin, mm-hmm. be good with your money and still have fun every now and then, but try and do the most responsible thing for the majority of the money.
Gotcha. So can you give us some positive money habits that you actually do personally? And if you have any negative, man, tell us so we can cut them off.
Man, I think the positive money things I do now, one, I have a spending plan. So I know I'm doing for my check. Each time I get a paycheck, I know what's being done with that before I even get the paycheck. So, you know, I'm getting paid in 2 weeks. I know exactly where all my money's going to. Another good one I've been doing is have my fund. So this is like where all my fun money is. So now I don't feel bad when I spend money. So that's always been important to me. And lastly, I'll say it's just been financially conscious. So not subconscious, because then when you're subconscious, you're just going to spend money and you really don't know where it's going. Then at the end of the month, you ask yourself, where did all my money go? But at least when I'm financially conscious, I can say, oh, that's why I spent the money on this. I was conscious at that moment. I was conscious for that transaction. And not to say I'm going to feel better about it, but at least I know the answer. And I know how to be different the next month. Otherwise, if you do it subconsciously, you don't know what's going on. You're going to do the same thing again next month.
Facts. So what about, you have any negative, or have you reached that financial literacy guru status? Where if you reached that, it's cool, man. That's why we're talking to you today.
No, negatively, I'm sure there's something I can think of. I'll say I might still be using my credit card too much. Every now and then, because I'm renovating the house, so every now and then I'll use my credit card for that. And I might get a little bit lazy of paying it off. Or I might try and push it off maybe a month or two. So I'll say that's one negative thing I've been doing. And another one is actually I don't worry about any of the small bills. So, for example, I got a late payment on my gas bill like maybe last month for $5. I said, oh, $5. I could care less. So, yeah, I'm not sure that's good or bad. Yeah, let's make that a negative one.
Yeah, definitely for, you know, the folks listening coming up. Pay them bills on top.
Definitely. It was a birthday month. I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't pay you that. Let me do that now.
Gotcha. So what is some general advice for young people? You know, what would you tell the high school or college version of Andre Albritton?
For the high school version, I said when you go to college, make sure you don't get a credit card. Or if you do get a credit card, be responsible. If anyone's getting any refund checks, don't blow it all. Save some of it, you know. College isn't expensive. Save like half and pay down some of the student loans. You'll be much happier later down the road. Now, for college, Andre, my biggest tip for people coming out of college is just to keep living below your means. So when you get out of college, a lot of people are going to say they are grown. They need to live on their own. They have a good job, blah, blah, blah. That's just going to keep eating into your margin. But if you live with someone else while you're used to it and it's okay to live with someone else, because like around age 40, you're probably not going to want a roommate, and people might look at you if you do have a roommate. So do it now while you can. Otherwise, you know, because you can build a lot of money. You can build a lot of assets up. So I would say if you focus 10 years on your finances from like age 20 to 30, you're going to be set in your 40s and 50s because you put in all the time early. So now you can actually reap the rewards later down the road.
So I got one more question for you, boss man. I'm going to read you two quotes, and you got to tell me which quote is more accurate in your opinion. All right. So my first quote is, money can't buy happiness. And my second quote is, more money, more problems.
And I'm saying which quote I believe the most, right?
Yes, sir. Which one is more accurate in your opinion?
I will go with more money, more problems.
Okay. Well,
I'm a firm believer that money can buy happiness. Like, if I had $1 million, I'm going to be so happy. I'm not going to blow it, but I can say, hey, I can buy a bunch of houses now, rent them out, and I don't have to do my job anymore. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to make it work for me. Mm-hmm. Now, for the more money, more problems, I think it becomes more problems because then you have more options. And then your true nature might show itself. So let's just say for a guy might say, well, I'm not the party type. But you get $1 million and say, you know what? I think I am the party type now. So you start going to the club and you get a lot of sections, a lot of bottles. You pull an Allen Iverson. Next thing you know, you're kind of broke from partying too much and buying jewelry. Yep. So you can be your own worst enemy with a lot of money. And your true nature just might show through the money. So, yeah, I'll go with that one.
Okay. Man, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for joining us on FY Fly the Podcast. Let the audience know where to reach you, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, so in true millennial fashion, you guys can find me on Instagram anytime at The Millennials Next Door. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, but most of the times I'm on Instagram. So, yeah, if you guys ever have any questions, feel more free to slide in the DMs. I'd be more than happy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I appreciate you coming here, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on the show, man. Love what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to, you know, collaborating and really pushing everybody towards financial freedom. That's the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal, man. Let's do it.
No cap. No cap. So now we're going to take it back to me and Remy G for one of our favorite segments called Did You Know? Let's get it. Welcome back. Welcome back to FY Fly the Podcast. And y'all already know what time it is, or maybe y'all don't. But me and Mr. Make a Play finna let y'all know. Did you know? REITs own about $3 trillion in real estate assets.
Did you know? The publicly traded REITs in the U.S. market have a collective market cap of about $1.1 trillion.
Did you know? REITs own almost 219,000 outdoor advertising properties.
Did you know? REITs contributed an estimated 2.4 million full-time jobs to the U.S. economy in 2018.
Did you know? REITs are responsible for paying $19 billion in annual property taxes.
Did you know? 87 million Americans own REITs as a retirement investment.
To wrap it all up for my FY Fly folks, we hope y'all learned a lot from our guy Andre Al Britton. Man is such a smart dude.
Gotta be a smart investor to take advantage of these plays, son.
That's facts, because REITs are hands down the easiest way to jump into real estate and become an investor. I saw a quote from Warren Buffett that really stuck with me. He said he doesn't jump over the highest hurdles, he steps over the small ones. And I really feel him on that. We get into this investing and trading game and go straight for the harder things like Forex, options trading. Those things are skills. That type of trading takes time and consistency to become efficient and make a profit.
That's a pretty nice size hurdle to see.
Yeah, most definitely. But it is one that you can jump over, but it's going to take some practice. But with that being said, we do know a hurdle that you can just step over. REITs.
So to recap our lessons from today, the top four reasons we love to invest in the REITs are: number one, REITs are required to pay out dividends. That's money in your sleep. Number two, instant diversification. All your eggs won't be in one basket. Number three, simplicity. Set up automated investing. And number four, low cost and low fees, baby. Much cheaper than mutual funds.
Appreciate you, top notch. So far, action items, because y'all know we can't leave y'all without them. Go do your own personal research on REITs. Go ahead and take a deep dive onto why we feel like this is such a good play. This is really how you make your money work for you. We take the money that we earn from our 9-to-5s, invest that into REITs, ETFs, businesses, ourselves, our businesses. Let's start using our money to make more money. You feel me? Well, again, we hope y'all learned something. And that's it from the FY Fly, guys. So we need y'all too. Stay safe.
Stay invested.
And stay fly.
Thank you all for listening to FY Fly the Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for more financial literacy insights with our special guest. Please visit our website, social media platforms, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at FYI Fly Podcast. That's FYI FLI Podcast. See y'all next week and stay fly.
But don't y'all go anywhere just yet. Stay tuned as each week here on FYI Fly, we like to give an independent artist a place to shine and gain some exposure. And this week we have Stu by 2Fi. Let's go. They call me the truth, smart as a youth. Started out hooping, they love when I shoot. 2-5-3, yeah, you know what I do. I get the beat and I turn it to stew. Saying my grace, cause these rappers like fool. Nothing to prove, nah, running it up like a boo.
y'all trying to fake it, I'm too raw. I'm rich a million, you G-Shock, that's heat rock.